On this week's episode of A Slice of Golf, we are joined by a very special guest, and we discuss specific movements which are killing your swing speed, how the long drive guys are able to generate such incredible power, and some things for you to work on that are going to help you launch the ball miles. As ever, this show is brought to you by me, Ben Fowlis.
Me, Chris Wright.
Me, Tim Williams.
And me, Steve Furlonger.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome along to another episode of A Slice of Golf. And today we are honoured to be joined by another special guest, someone who myself and Chris know very well, someone who knows myself and Chris's distinctly average golf swings pretty well, someone who is the owner of probably the most tricked out golf studio I've ever seen, and he is the expert when it comes to a particular area of golf coaching. Welcome to the show, Mr. Steve Furlonger.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I feel like we need that was such a great intro. I feel like we need like a button that cheers and he's like, yeah!
Yeah. Been preparing and rehearsing that all day.
Very good. I have to say, top marks for that.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for inviting me on, gentlemen.
It's good to have you on. Steve, you know, we're going to selfishly pick your brains over the next hour or so about some myths regarding power and launching the ball further. We'll come on to that in a sec. Okay, you are a golf coach. You are an expert in a specific area. Introduce the listeners to yourself and what this specialist area is, please, sir.
Okay, so I'm a full-time coach, PGA professional based over at Bletchingley Golf Club in Surrey, and specialise in ground reaction forces, which is quite a hot topic at the moment with Bryson DeChambeau smashing the ball miles. Came out of the block last year after the pandemic first kind of locked down with the world, and all of a sudden we saw this big guy, very, very big guy, hitting the ball colossal distances that nobody had hit before. So he's a bit of a scientist at heart. He had embraced the physics of golf and seeked out some people that were specializing in ground reaction forces and technology that I'm involved in as well, to measure his forces, how he pushes into the ground and the energy he puts into his system. And he moved the needles bigger than anyone else has done to this day. And he's hitting it a long way. So that's my field of specialization. So I got involved in ground reaction forces in 2013.
Can I just ask a really, really silly question?
Yeah.
Ground reaction forces, for the person like me that doesn't know what a ground reaction force is, what in its simplest terms, what is it?
Okay, Newton's third law, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So you push into something, it pushes you back.
Okay. So the harder you push into the floor, the harder it pushes back.
Yeah. There's a fantastic video on YouTube, a golf pro actually who's Bryson's current coach, Chris Como. If you look for Chris Como, search Chris Como diving board, you will see Chris Como jumping off a diving board, making a golf swing in the air. And yeah, as he was moving his torso and his arms to the left, like a forward swing of a golf swing, his pelvis turned in the opposite direction. So without the ground, we can't move our pelvis properly. Okay. So we need the ground to play golf to generate power. Unfortunately, non-negotiable physics.
Yeah. Yeah, got it.
So it's pretty key in the golf swing, essentially.
Absolutely.
Steve, I've kind of, I go down YouTube rabbit holes kind of all the time, and I've watched a bunch of Bryson's training. Now, the force plates that his coach, Chris Como, has, they're the same as yours. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I purchased my force plates in January last year, so I was the fifth pro in the world to purchase them, first one in the UK. There were not many of us at the time, so we were all going through this discovery journey because even the inventor himself hadn't been using them in the trenches that much and doing lots of lessons on them. So I was kind of out on my own with it and took a 12 months of learning, almost felt like doing a degree in physics, learning about the patterns of golfers, how they move, how they push through their feet. And became very fortunate to start working with numerous European tour players now, challenge tour players. Currently working with an ex-Masters champion, although he hasn't been on the plates, but he seeked me out because of the knowledge of ground reaction forces. And I work with competitive world long drivers as well. So through Lee Cox, who's a good friend of mine who coaches these players. So my database now consists of about 4,000 golf swings. So I've got quite a lot of information on the database to look at patterns and trends, what golfers do, what slow golfers do, what bad golfers do, and what really fast golfers do differently. The plates that Chris has that you see on Chris Como's Instagram, I have the same plates.
And we can see on your Instagram, I assume.
Yes, you can. You can get information on my Instagram. I'm sort of obviously away from the studio a little bit now. I'm still working with tall players during lockdown because of the player pathway and being professionals in sport. They can still train and be coached. It's unfortunate to still be getting out and seeing some of my players, but generally I'm here. So a lot of the stuff that I do is, you know, from the database, a lot of the videos that I post on social media. I think one of the reasons why I've kind of climbed to where I am now in the world of ground reaction forces is that I kind of put it in layman's terms. People like think the way I do things because I make it sound really simple. I take a very technical subject and make it simple. So I use, you know, I've got my various aids that I use. I've got like a little frisbee. If you see my social media, Instagram, I use this little frisbee to show how the golfer turns about their center. And, you know, little things like that. And golf pros have started to follow me. I do a lot of coach education online now because they like to know the terminology. They like the official terminology, but they want to be able to articulate it to give it to their golfers that are recreational, you know, weekend warriors, and be able to put it across without, you know, blowing their mind with technical jargon.
That's it. And I think this is why me and Chris have kind of worked so well with you in our own lessons in the past. It is putting the technical, but breaking it down simply. And this is why we were really keen to kind of get you on and hopefully highlight to people the importance of what you're putting out and how it can actually impact our games as well as the big boys. Because obviously we see the big boys doing it and we know they're a little bit further ahead than us, a lot further ahead than us, and have access to all these cool things.
Can I ask you something here? So you've been on the plates, right?
Yeah.
So I've also been on the plates. And Steve, I love how Steve like just didn't mention the out of those 4,000 swings that he's recorded, you and I, the average, super, super average golfers are also on there. So you can compare the really shit with the really good. But let me ask you, like, what was your experience on those force plates? What did you get out of it? Because I think it might be interesting to ask you, as in you've used them, what did you get out of it that you may not have got from another lesson or whatever with someone else?
Yeah, I mean, I know I am, I guess, different to a lot of people. We all have different ways that we learn. I geek out on tech and I love data. I love evidence of exactly why I'm being asked to do something and then how that can then be translated into feelings. And that was one thing that Steve and I worked pretty well with. It was literally showing me a video of what I'd done, what my feet had done, and what I needed to change, and then how it, for me, it just made the transition that much quicker, that much easier, because you have visual evidence of exactly what's going on rather than just being explained a certain feeling. I think if you marry up the two like Steve does, I think it, for me, someone who I feel like I learned that way, it definitely helped me to learn it and understand it quicker, and ultimately it's going to make you a better golfer quicker. So yeah.
Yeah, for me, what was interesting, and this, I'm very wary that if I say something that Steve's like, Chris, that is just not what that is, and I'm just now like, I don't want to like sit and pitch the wrong thing, but for me, the visual data of what's really happening in my swing, like there was one moment where we were on the lesson, and I just remember Steve looking at the graph and being, you see that line there, Chris, and that literally shouldn't be there, that should be like further along here, over here, or whatever. I was like, okay. And as soon as he said that, I was like, okay, so what's happening? And Steve, we talked about, I think it was my back heel. He was like, we need to actually trigger this earlier. I can't remember exactly what the word, the phrase was, but then it became a game to me, right? Because then I could see the line and I could go, the way that I get that line closer to where it's supposed to be is if I do this thing quicker or whatever it was in my swing. And it just having that visual cue, it almost then made me focus on the process rather than the outcome, if that makes sense. And that was, I know we're not talking about force, like power at this point, but we're talking like there's the same, the force plates and looking at where the forces are happening. And that was a light bulb moment for me, for sure. Just having that visual cue and being like, go after that, not the result. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Certainly. That was for me. Steve, something that kind of we wanted to touch upon is something that you'll find bounded around social media, some golf magazines, maybe. You see some coaches speaking about it. It's something that we spoke about prior to the podcast. I was trying to dispel some of the myths of kind of generating more speed in the golf swing, because we're told to swing the club a certain way from when we were kids. We see it all over the TV. We see certain things. What are your top three swing myths on speed killers?
And by the way, I'm really hoping that the data backs this up. I'm hoping I'm looking forward to this.
Okay, so number one, swing slower. You hear that all the time. I mean, it's a big one on social media, especially with YouTube.
Okay, sorry, I'm going to have to pause you there because I am very guilty myself of swinging very recklessly at times in an attempt to, we'll go with garner more distance. Are you saying that I should be going at it? What are we talking about in terms of going 100% at every golf ball off the tee, or should I be 90-95, or what are we talking here by slower?
And can I add to that? Are you talking about like when I absolutely like mess up a shot and Ben turns around and goes, Chris, actually what you need to do, just slow your swing down, bring it back. Like, is that the advice we're talking about, where Ben, like, they're like, just slow your swing down, bring it back down, just get it under control? Like, is that what we're talking about?
Well, there's lots of advice that gets handed out on the golf course, which is can often be we could discuss all day about that sort of advice. But, you know, when it comes to swinging driver, you know, I see people and have people coming into my studio every day saying they want to hit it further, right? So you're not going to hit it very far if you swing it slow, right? Yeah. Number one. Number two, when you're training, I think it's good practice to train faster. And then, you know, especially have a phase of your practice session where you kind of overspeed, you go over the top and try and swing faster, swing to your max. And, you know, maybe spray the face with some, you know, some foot powder. You see, I do this a lot. We've done it with the group, and I post a little bit on social media about just strike and looking at strike patterns, just so you're aware of where you're hitting it. And just swing really, really fast. And then after
all the way through, backswing through, like the whole thing, just really quick.
Yeah, I'd go definitely. I mean, for the important thing is your backswing's got to be quick. You can't just expect the downswing to be really, really quick. The backswing needs to be faster as well if you're going to increase speed. And the thing is, when you move the club faster, you need to apply a force to slow it down a lot earlier. And you need to apply a lot more force to do so. So effectively, that force is going to be your friend, and it's going to help you create that more speed. And when you do move quicker, generally, I mean, our brains are incredible pieces of machinery in the sense that, you know, we're very good at being able to control ourselves when, you know, when things go really bad and there's lots of chaos. Our brain's very good at organizing it, self-organizing. It seems to work better under pressure. So when it goes faster, you'll be surprised how much better you get at organizing your body, organizing your balance and lots of other things. So when you're working at speed and then you slow it down and hit the golf ball, it gets a little bit easier. I always use the analogy, if you play snooker and then go and play pool, all of a sudden the game of pool seems to be a lot easier because the pockets get bigger. So if you swing really fast and then go out and swing a little bit slower, it seems like it's a bit easier. Things you've got more time to do it in. So using overspeed in that sense.
Steve, can I just jump in real quick? Because I think the key thing that I've heard there already, and the one that I know gets banded around a lot, although I think we've got to be a bit careful here, is slow the backswing down. Like, I hear about slow backswing all the time. Yeah. And it might be that, you know, you'll tell me this, but is that a difference of someone just, you know, learning to strike the ball better versus someone who wants to hit the ball further? Is that two very, very different trainings, or should we just still be training at speed? Like, should that just be like, you should be swinging back quickly?
And just to add on that, that was the bit I picked up on straight away as well, because I can't tell you how many times I've had the kind of whimsical conversation with guys and mates on the course of sort of, why is it that you get to the top of your swing and then for whatever reason, you just absolutely, your body just takes over and you grip and just absolutely rip the downswing. We've all had that conversation. Or I'm guessing a lot of people listening to this have had that conversation. We've all had that conversation. So I suppose it's interesting to kind of figure out or listen to a different point of view, which is like, that's actually just your body kind of naturally doing that. That's natural. So rather than the slow backswing and try to be slow and controlled all the way through, kind of, is it more of a case of actually listening to that dynamic and that your body is going to naturally kind of explode a little bit on the downswing anyway, and therefore you need the same pace all the way through?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to speed something up suddenly, isn't it? Yeah. That's one thing. And I mean, that if there's one of the biggest gains Bryson has made is by increasing his backswing tempo. You know, that's the biggest gain that he's made. So, you know, and the thing is with this, lots of things happen when you swing faster on the way back. I don't know if you try, when you try and swing really slow and you try and think positions on the way back as well. And I, you know, came from an era where my idol was Nick Faldo. So we went through an era as a kid watching the club and stopping the club at shaft horizontal on the backswing, making sure it's perfectly in line with the foot, making sure the toe of the club is pointing up to 12 o'clock. And I obsessed over that for probably the best part of maybe 7 or 8 years of my playing life, making sure that that position was always hit in every rehearsal. And you get to a point where you almost struggle to get it there in the sense that you're thinking about that so much and trying to do it so perfectly that you forget that, you know, actually there's this white thing that we're trying to hit down there, because you're just obsessed with everything looking here all the time like this. And I use a drill now, you know, the first drill I generally work for when a player comes to me looking for speed is that I get them to make a part follow through. So I get them to move the club past impact, to think moving the club sort of 2 feet forwards. And then from that point, pull it back really quickly until the shaft is horizontal. And a number of things happen there. It's called counter torque. So when you move the club forwards, your body, you have to apply a force in the opposite direction to slow it down, one, two, to change direction, and then B, to swing it in the direction you want to make a backswing. So you create a lot more force. So it increases what we call as the amount of force over time. It's called impulse. So when you do that, your body starts to maneuver. You move the bigger muscles of your body. You're less wristy. You're less armsy. You tend to move the mass of the body and move it and accelerate it quicker, which starts to really move up the forces and ramp things up. And that's a big drill. That, for me, is the number one when it comes to bringing up the speed, that counter-torque drill. And it gets you, every time I've done this and I record my swing, I'm in the perfect position at shaft horizontal. I'm at the position that I strived to do for so long that I tried to do ultra slow and look at it that it was perfectly on plane. It takes me there every time without even thinking about it. It's almost liberating.
So are you saying, that's actually quite, obviously, it's, if you're listening to this, it's quite a difficult drill to picture. I might Steve ask you to throw a video in my way that I can put up in the group after this goes live. But so you're basically saying the goal is to swing the whole swing faster. So don't, like, the backswing should be quicker.
Yeah, backswing quicker.
Everything should be quicker. But yeah. I'm guessing you're not saying on the 29th when we're allowed back out again, your first tee shot, just try and train your speed. Like you're saying, in your training,
when you're training, speed absolutely. Training.
Yeah. So like go through and practice swinding faster.
It is normal. That was going to be my... Yeah, that was going to be my question on the matter, on kind of the overspeed stuff, Steve. What's the kind of practical kind of application of overspeed stuff? Is it hitting 50% of your golf balls as hard as you can, or is it 20%? Is it a whole separate session in its own right? Is it something you work on in the gym? You know, how do you split up, or how would you recommend splitting up practice if you're going to be looking to implement the overspeed stuff?
I mean, there's lots of devices out there. There's some really cool systems that have actually just come onto the market, which help you with that kind of training system. So you've got super speed is one. Everyone kind of knows super speed. They're kind of almost like a golf club with weights on the end of them instead of a club head. And there's three different colours, so there's different weights. There's a new one called the stack system, I believe, which has actually got you unscrew the top and you've got these little ring weights that you slide in and you put your data onto an app and the money is in the app. So the AI of the app, it's learning and prescribing to you the next weight system that you should move up to. So when your speed starts to increase, you slide on another weight ring on the end and seal it up and then go with that one until your swing increases. And then you move it up and there's X amount. I forget how many combinations of weights there are, but it's an incredible system. It's not cheap, but it's a brilliant system. And the technology is in the app. And as it's learning and prescribing and helping you get faster and apply the correct weights. A lot of people pick up super speed and just get the heavy one. Oh yeah, I can start throwing this around and I'm going to get faster. It's not the case. You're supposed to be building your speed up, one arm swings, etc. There's a training program that they prescribe. Now, generally, when I'm doing it, if I'm doing it with a golf club, I call it kind of priming. I'd like the golfer to make kind of free practice swings. So there'd be a kind of a they will build the speed up. So their third swing of the practice swing is max speed. And then they hit the golf ball. Generally, it gets them breathing a little bit faster, gets the heart beating a little bit faster. It primes them and gets them kind of almost pumped to move a bit quicker. And I do that with all my players when we're working at max speed, you know, that priming pre-shot routine. So I would do that. And I'd say probably you want to be doing quality over quantity. So, you know, maybe five balls. So three practice swings, five shots in total, prime yourself up to top speed, hit a ball, again, prime it, hit a ball, and then take a break, have a bit of a breather. And then go again. Something you're seeing Bryson do at the moment, he's doing quite a lot of swings one after the other consecutively, almost like seven swings, I believe he does at some points, like full speed. He's getting proper pumped up. You can hear him inhaling, going really quick at it. He's priming himself, ready to go and ready to pull the trigger, basically.
And is this, if we're trying to kind of give this to kind of the listeners to go and work on themselves, is this something to be done once a week at the range? Is it something to be done twice a week? Or is it something you'd benefit from doing once a month or sticking to it just over the winter months? Or what are we looking at? Or is it something that we can just do once a week, year round, and it will gradually, you're going to see improvements?
Is it going to do you any harm doing it once a week? Absolutely not. And you know, if you buy one of these speed training systems and follow their program, you know, they have a set, you know, program that they insist that you follow, and you follow that and you've got some way of measuring your swing speed, you get going. I don't see people that stick to it religiously. If you do stick to the plan, you'll get faster. So there's your distance. You know, just on this subject, talking about speed and stuff. Now, I obviously haven't covered one important thing. If you've got somebody that is so badly off plane, swinging it dreadfully, that they're a mad axeman going at it, right? Then that isn't going to help things going faster. So, you know, this doesn't apply to the axeman. But it is surprising when somebody is quite off plane, how fast the movements do allow them to almost, because the club and the way it moves and wants to rotate about its center of mass, it does start to kind of line itself up. If the golfer's got some idea and concept of what a swing plane is and what the angle they should be swinging it on. You know, a lot of this stuff does come down to the concept of the golfer, what they think a golf swing should look like. If you've got somebody that thinks a golf swing's vertical, that they're swinging it over their head instead of thinking that it's on an angle, it's an incline the club travels up and down on, they need some education and need to have some golf lessons to understand that the golf swing is like an elliptical circle.
So basically, it's like you will get quicker, but you'll still be hitting a shit shot because it'll just be a quicker and longer shit shot because you're coming in at the wrong plane.
In theory, yes. If you do come in on the wrong plane, you're going to chop across it. But what you will do, you're obviously going to hit it a bit further. If it's further offline, might not help you. But the thing is, if you're short and crooked versus long and crooked, I'd rather be long and crooked because at least I've got a shorter shot to the green after it. So there's, you're gaining shots on the, you know, effectively, and going to reduce your scores if you're further down there, as long as it doesn't get considerably wider. And that's
the train the golf swing and then train speed.
If you're a mad axeman, you need to have some concept of swing plane.
Yeah.
And then after that, then swinging it faster is going to help you a great deal. You don't want to be swinging it slower.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice. No, I think that roundabout sums it up. Don't swing slower, basically.
And want more distance, you know, you need to be considering swinging it faster.
For me, the big, and I know I've tried this a couple of times with you, Steve, the backswing speed thing is, that's my, like, that's the one that I almost struggle to get over. Like, that's the one I think I'm quite slow in the backswing still. And that's the one that I'm really keen to go and practice immediately. Like, okay, so what happens if I swing my backswing faster? What happens? Does your downswing and get quicker as a result? Is that what happens?
Generally, yeah, you see the downswing increase in speed as well. More forces need to be applied to the club to slow it down and change direction. So you find the downswing's much easier to get quicker if you're going faster going back.
And just to come back to what we said about the backswing again, sorry to Laura on this. You can guess where a few of us are having some perceived issues with our swings. Just to recap on what you were saying earlier, the chances are if you have a slower backswing, then there's a chance that you're giving your brain a little bit too much time to overthink, overanalyze what you're doing in the backswing. And this, I can absolutely attest to this because I've actually, during lockdown, obviously not a lot to do, so I've watched a lot of my own swings. So I can actually see that there are points in my backswing where my head actually begins to follow the path I'm bringing the club head back on to make sure my backswing is going back on plane, which actually is probably not doing me that much good.
No. I think it's
Tim going through 37 swing thoughts in his backswing, like, I'm here, great, now go.
I agree 100% in that sense, is that, you know, it's you know, trying to, I don't know, you're trying to drive your car and, you know, somebody asks you to drive it incredibly slow and you have to drive it perfect or they're going to shoot you. You know, when you're under pressure and you're trying to do things absolutely precisely at really slow speeds, it's actually quite difficult. Whereas especially when swinging a golf club, because of the way the club is designed, its weight, where the center of mass sits with the club, when you move the handle correctly, and we are trying to move the handle, right? That's our contact with the club. When we move the handle correctly, when you're doing it at speed and you've got a concept of swinging it round your body and up your body slightly, it moves on plane and moves on track much better.
One thing that really makes me laugh about this conversation is if you ask me to throw a ball as far as I could, like, there's no technical to it, right? You just pick it up, you launch it as far as you can. There's no questions asked. Golf swing, hit it as far as you can. Okay. Let me get into the right position of my backswing. Let's slow this down. Let's move this. Let's change this. Let's tweak this. Like, I can totally see, like, the overthinking happening the whole way through the swing, as opposed to get up, swing as fast as you can, and just launch it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when people take up the game, what do they try and do? They try and hit it as hard as possible, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're taking the club on a dreadful plane and, you know, chopping wood with it. And that's a big issue. So they've got to get some concept. If you were to show them a video of somebody swinging it on plane, I'm sure that they would, the human nature to start copying, right? That's what we have. Yeah. We have that as a child. We copy what's in front of us and what we've been shown to do. So you just show somebody what the swing plane is and where they should be. Let them carry on swinging at speed. Don't tell them to slow down. I wouldn't be telling somebody to slow down anymore. I'll put my hands up and say, I used to coach that. I'd be certainly trying to keep that speed element up. And just giving them a concept of just getting it on that line. So, you know, you start sucking all that speed out of somebody. The goal of the game, the objective is you've got to carry over hazards, right? There's this hazard and trouble in front of you. And for a lot of people with their tee shots, if they're not carrying it far enough, they're going to be hitting it into trouble anyway.
Steve, with that as well, you know, we've all been there. We've all tried on the driving range where we tried to swing absolutely off our feet and it's sprayed absolutely everywhere. You know, there's not a chance it's coming anywhere close to hitting kind of a fairway out on the golf course. At what point do we kind of,
I mean, how much fairways anyway, does he? I mean,
well, Shut up. nothing to come back with. At what point and kind of to what degree do we turn a blind eye to that and kind of say, look, I am here to train speed? Because I always think, right, I know what I'm doing. I'm going there to train speed and I hit one or two way offline and I'm like, ah, maybe I should just slow it down. Maybe I should just correct it. Let's just try and steer it. How many balls do you think, right, go and work on it? You know, if you were at a driving range, say, would it be 5 balls and just ignore where they go? 10 balls, ignore where they go? Or is it way beyond that?
I don't think you should ever ignore where the ball goes. I think that you should always have a start line goal. And whether you can, if you can put something down, a stone in front, if you can't walk out in front of the range and put something down, a stone in front of the golf ball that you want to start the ball. Over that stone, if it's curving, you better be starting it left of that stone. If it's curving to the right, and you better be starting it right of that stone in front down the target line, right? You better start it right if it's curving back to the left. You need to be practicing the start line of your golf ball all the time, right? And I would say, yeah, why not? Why, you know, go full bore and try and start that ball online. Yeah, don't give up just because it's going. You know, you should be training this. This is training, right? Keep going with it until you can start it online.
Nice. I like that.
You know, and I think the priming thing is quite important. But if you're looking at increasing speed, that's what you should be doing. You've got to start concentrating on training speed. The number one priority is going faster. Nothing more than that. So train yourself to go faster and to control. You start to learn, you control your golf ball. Going faster, start it on the right line.
Nice. So for everyone listening, for when we do finally get back out on the golf course, if you do have a friend that tells you to swing just that little bit slower and to hit it straight, you have our permission to tell them to piss off. something else that kind of typically comes up as kind of a tip from your mate is keep your head still or keep your head down. Now, I know kind of you wanted to talk about this, Steve.
Yeah, this is a big one. You hear this one. This is the typical kind of cliche that you hear on the driving range, right? Every other bay has been somebody's telling the person in there to keep their head down. Biomechanically, it doesn't work. If you keep your head down, you're keeping your neck, your cervical spine this way and looking down at the golf ball. Try to rotate the next part down, which is your thoracic. So you lock this section down, the next part's going to be part locked as well. And then you've got very little mobility through your lumbar spine, which is the bottom of your spine. So effectively that whole chain all the way down is just not moving. So have you ever tried it, but keep your head down like that and try and make a follow through. It's very restricted. So that number one, it just doesn't help you in rotating.
Everyone listening right now, unless they're driving, has tucked their chin on their chest, looked down at the floor, and now tried to rotate. I'm telling you, if you haven't, do it immediately, unless you're driving. Like, put your head down and try and rotate and do the follow through with keeping your head down.
You just can't do it, right? It's impossible to properly rotate. So, you know, that's number one. Biomechanically, it's just not right. So you need to, the anatomy of the body, you need to work the correct way and have your rotation. So your head... I'm not saying, you know, I like to see head movement this way, side to side, definitely. So start to get the rotation in your neck. Now, the long drivers, believe it or not, move their head quite a bit on their backswing. The head accounts to about 10% of the total weight of the body. And long drivers lift their center, think belly button area, center of mass of the golfer. You know, imagine if you were lying down and somebody was to pick you up, you know, the world's strongest man was to hold you under their finger and you was lying flat, they would balance you about your belly button. So that's your balance point, okay? So effectively, that balance point moves from side to side and moves up and down in the golf swing. And I've got long drivers that move that balance point considerably to the right on their backswing and move it up quite a bit as well. And what that does, it gives them the ability to slam it down really quickly. And when you do that, you create a push into the ground, which is called vertical force, that will help you spring back up, which is a very powerful mechanism to helping you strike the ball at speed and out the middle of the club face, if it's done at the right time. And importantly, that's what I'm talking about here is timings. You need to see somebody that has the equipment that can show you it that you're getting the timings right. But long drivers, that's what they do. You see, you look at Carl Berkshire, the current world long drive champion, the fastest guy with the fastest ball speed indoors, Martin Borgmeier, those two guys on social media. Look at their heads, pick a spot above their head when you watch their video. They've all got slow-mos on their Instagram. Pick a spot above their head. You'll see their head move up considerably on the first part of the backswing. And then it levels out, right, quite quickly on the early stage of their backswing. And they slam it down really quickly. And then it pops back up again as they come through the ball. So there's a lot going on. So you need to kind of, with the anatomy of the body, it makes sense to move it side to side. And also, if you're looking from a speed perspective, to be able to create force and rotation about your body center, moving it off of center slightly is going to help you create more speed.
Steve, with that, trying to kind of put a picture and put a visual onto it, for people at home. Now, there's a lot of PGA Tour golf going on this weekend, and he tripped me up just a little bit, but Wacky Neiman, fell away a little bit on Saturday, Sunday due to the weather, but he's got very... What's that?
Plus seven. Hasn't upset me at
all. Yeah. He's got a very pronounced kind of drop in the head. Commentators talk about it all the time. Almost every time he plays, you commentators bring it up. Is that the level that we're talking about, or is that too much? Is that negatively impacting his swing, or is it positively just like the long drive guys?
The timings of that move are critical. So I see players getting slower if they do that too early. Okay. So when players tend to drop, they start to lose head height on halfway in their backswing, there's going to be a major problem because you're going to want to start to stand up. So the long drivers move it up a little bit, tend to keep it quite steady at that point with good rotation to the side. And then when they start their downswing, they then accelerate it down quite quickly, comes down a bit. And then it steadies itself and then they rotate, hit the golf ball, and then it pops back up again. So effectively, it would need to, I can't sort of recall his swing off the top of my head. I would, like to have a little look at it and come back to you guys with an analysis maybe. But it's important, just the timings of it. When the player is doing it.
Now, is this something that we're actively going to go and weigh and practice, or is it more of a case of not restricting yourself and just letting your head do its natural thing?
I would say you need to go and see somebody. If you're going to start to create a lifting motion, you need to see a specialist that can help you do that, somebody that specializes in ground reaction forces. And if it's speed production that you're looking for, then that may well be an avenue to create more speed.
But what you're saying is, if I understand this right, is lots of us, I've definitely done this in the past, is stood over the ball at the practice at the driving range and just thought to myself, keep my head over the ball, keep my head here, rotate here. What you're saying is don't worry about your head, what your head's doing, basically.
Turning the head side to side is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
If it moves a little bit, it's not the end of the world. So, if you feel that there is a head moving issue, you need to record your swing and track it.
Yeah.
But fast players do move their head.
Yeah.
But if you stop moving it, what doesn't mean you're going to become a better golfer.
Yeah.
It may not be the solution to take.
Your swing may be crap. So go and get that fixed first.
My swing is crap.
But keeping the head down, the whole thing, when you see that person on the driving range that does that, puts the chin into there, keeps it there, makes a short backswing because they can't rotate, and the short follow through because they can't rotate is dreadful.
Yeah.
It's hurting the golfer.
So just allow more, don't focus so much on keeping your head stable. Let the head do what it wants to do in terms of rotation side to side.
Yeah.
Got it. Absolutely. Like it.
And the third and final one that is kind of heard quite commonly up and down driving ranges on the golf course is keep your feet quiet. Yeah. Now, first of all, just kind of stripping it back lay terms, what do people really mean by keeping your feet quiet?
Well, I was taught as a junior that I was told the phrase, quiet feet work a treat.
Okay, what does this mean? What does quiet feet mean?
Not moving my feet around at all until I get to the follow through. So keeping my feet really still, not letting them move around too much.
So now, Bryson DeChambeau, who wriggles around like he's at a disco, he's ripping up that textbook, I'm assuming.
Absolutely, because you know you've got the ability. There's two connections. There's a connection at the handle with your grip, and there's a connection to the ground. So you've got two connections that you can apply force to. So the ground, we know from earlier discussion that you can't move your body. Your pelvis is an important engine of the golf swing. And for most people, they struggle to move their pelvis correctly. Most golfers, I'd say probably 75 to 80% of golfers have got issues moving their pelvis correctly. Now, you know, if you're not pushing through your ground and your feet are moving around a little bit, okay, I'm not saying it's lifting them up like this, but they're moving around a bit. You're pushing the ground underneath your feet. If you're not doing that and moving that earth a bit, that, you know, you're not going to create force and you're not going to be able to maneuver your body correctly, especially when it comes from a speed and power perspective. You just won't be hitting it very far at all. So Bryson shifts around his feet, especially on downswing. You'll see that front foot, the left foot, moving around quite a bit as they come into impact and post-impact. Long drivers do it a lot. It's because there's a lot of force there. It's making that foot rise up and it's making that foot go back and rotate back around. And that gets the pelvis open a lot as well. And that there's a lot of magic involved there. If your pelvis starts to, your belt buckle thing, if that starts to rotate towards the target and your shoulders are nice and square towards the target, so the rotation of your pelvis is turned through more, your shoulders are nice and square, almost your sternum looking at the golf ball, you know, you're going to be able to make a, you know, a really good move through the golf ball from that and creates a lot of speed through the ball. Most golfers I see struggle getting their pelvis, a right amount of open and the tilt across their pelvis correct.
In regards to that, it sounds like, you know, there's a lot going on. As we all know, there's a hell of a lot going on in a golf swing, as it is. Is that a sequencing thing, or is it a technique thing, or is it simply a mobility thing that's preventing people from getting hips through?
Can I jump in here? Because I think I was about to say something before you started talking there, and I actually think it's going to follow on from your question there, Ben. For me, when through working with Steve last year, I've always had the understanding, you know, we're always told, like, start your downswing with your hips, start your downswing with your legs, start your downswing with your legs. For me, there's a difference, a huge, 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 huge difference that I now understand and can feel. I was starting my downswing with my hips. I'm like, okay, rotate my downswing, like rotate, right? There's a difference for me anyway, this is my feeling, of doing that compared to to starting with my feet. Right? Does that make sense? So when I get to the top and I'm now like, right, go, it's now like full legs, not just turning my hips. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what I took it. That's my feeling, Steve. Is that along the right lines?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I've recently had a look at your data again, and something that, you know, flagged up a little bit more to me now. And I'd say more so as I've got more knowledgeable and certainly gained more from, you know, more swings that I've seen. Because I've got better and better each session that I give on the force plates, because I learn more and see different patterns. And we're humans and we all, you know, move somewhat different to one another because of range of motion and, you know, muscle flexibility, etc. With you in particular, you get quite a lot of force coming from your right hand side. So you're quite forceful from your right side. Think kind of your wallet pocket at the back. You seem to have quite a lot of force that's going in that direction, pushing you towards the golf ball. But the thing is with the pelvis, unless you're putting a force through the other side, I kind of look at the pelvis being like almost like a child's merry-go-round. So, you know, you've got kind of somebody pushing it from one side, you've got daddy pushing it from one side, and you've got mummy pushing it, pointing in the opposite direction from the other side. So you've got a force coming from the back right pocket and a force going through the front left pocket. Does that make sense? So
yeah. Yeah, but you're
that force,
and they're opposing each other. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So effectively, you get quite a lot of force that goes from the right side, but you don't get a lot of force going from the left side.
Right.
So then what happens is that your body starts to shift towards the golf ball because it's got nowhere to go, because there's no, you know, daddy's pushing the merry-go-round from this side, but mummy's not pushing it from the other side coming back.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's- okay. And that's what I see as a common pattern. I was, you know, the first pro in the world to put something out on social media to do with the force and ground reaction forces that the golfer needs to be to move their pelvis. Imagine your the analogy I use. If you stood on an ice rink with normal shoes, you've got frictional force. So if you were to frantically push your feet forwards and backwards, there's no friction, there's no ground reaction force pushing you back. So your feet would just frantically go forwards and back. And what happens there is the golfer's kind of pushing back really hard with the right foot, like you are, but not pushing hard enough through the front foot to help get the pelvis around.
Got you. Yeah, that makes sense. Just quickly for anyone who's listening, Tim's gone really, really quiet now because he's disappeared off
the podcast. Steve carried it out very well.
Steve carried on talking. I was very impressed. That was unbelievable. Yeah, that does make sense. And I think for me, the changes, the feeling for me of starting my downswing with my feet, both feet, like, and really not hips. Like for me, it was always bring the right hip through, rotate, turn.
Yeah.
And for me, that was now, I don't think the right feeling. And when I crush it, I know when I've gone like legs, like really gone legs, feet, like really pushing through the ground. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Williams is back.
Just basically took 5 minutes off to go and just practice my swings and my pelvic movements around it. Practice makes perfect and all that.
So quiet feet, what is now, I feel like, going to be really, really difficult to get across on a podcast is what does that look like or feel like for someone if they're practicing? Ben's looking at me. Yeah, go ahead.
Steve, let me jump in here because I had a question I wanted to jump in, and it may make people picture it a little bit better. I think it might tie into Chris's. Francesco Molinari made a swing change a couple of years ago. From looking at videos and photos, correct me if I'm wrong, but he had what would be termed as quiet feet beforehand, made the change, and then all of a sudden his left heel is coming off the floor. Now, is this ground reaction forces? Is this allowing him to turn his pelvis more, create more, and just get more power? And is that the way the golf swing is now heading, of that front heel is actually recommended to come off the floor instead of remaining planted?
Yeah,
I mean, a double loaded question there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, your personal trainer, Ben, and Chris, that was an industry that you was involved with in your past as well. I think that obviously with hip mobility, with people with their kind of lower body strength is quite poor, especially if sitting on your bum most of the day, your glutes don't get much of a workout. That when you're trying to keep that left foot down and make a backswing, it will inhibit your ability to rotate and turn your pelvis the amount that you need to do and to get the correct amount of rotation. So lifting that left heel a little bit on your backswing is going to help you, and it will break down that glue a little bit that's kind of sticking you down a little bit and stopping that rotation. And I'm not saying it's for everybody, because some people won't be able to tolerate that movement under their feet. But for the vast majority, it would help a lot, especially for the aging population. Especially, I'm getting into that bracket now with my grey hair. I'm certainly not any more flexible in my old age. I'm getting, less so. That, lifting my left foot has helped me create more speed, because it helps me moves my body around, and then importantly allows me to kind of use that foot and push it into the ground more, because it kind of, that foot gets lighter when you lift it, and then that gives me the ability to push that foot and make it heavier, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Trying to put it in layman's terms for those that are listening. So when that foot is being lifted, it's kind of unweighting. So then I can then slam it down and create some push down underneath it, and that's going to create a force that's going to help move my left side around much more.
Yeah, I get it. I think what I'm trying to understand is if I'm sat down now, right? If you're listening, I'm sat down, and if I sort of just relax and don't put any force through the floor and just turn, you'll be able to like create some level of rotation. If I really like almost grip the floor and drive through from the floor, that for me is what I'm picturing as the opposite of quiet feet. Like that for me, if I really push through and go for it, like that's when I'm gripping the floor. Does that make sense? That's the, yeah, my feeling.
So, sorry, you're saying that you feel quieter when you're not gripping. So when you're trying to just swing your arms and hands without any...
Yeah, so if I just sit here, relax, don't use the floor and just turn. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's me thinking quiet feet, right? That's, yeah, me, I don't do anything. If I'm thinking, right, loud feet, quote unquote, and really put the force through the floor, I feel like I can use the floor to, like, push off. Like, it's like, you know, imagine I'm doing a squat, but driving up and through. That for me is what I'm picturing as... not having quiet feet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Your feet can push in three different directions. So you can push down to help you move up. Okay, yeah. Jump. You can push to the side to help you kind of side glide or shift side to side or sway. And you can push forwards and backwards. Again, it's back on the ice rink. Push your feet through your shoes and backwards and forwards. So there's three directions you can push. Okay. And they will put there effectively, that's going to give you, you know, when you're standing on the turf or on the mat, wherever you are playing golf, you're getting a ground reaction force. You're going to get energy back into the system. Newton's law, the equal and opposite reaction. So if you're wanting to create, you know, when we rotate our body kind of tilts to make a backswing to help it move on a sensible line or plane. And then when we come down, that tilt reverses and it goes back in the opposite direction to help us swing on a plane on the way down and through. Now, to make our body tilt, we need to create a force that's going to push that side higher and drop the other side. Okay, does that make sense? You need to push into the ground to do that. To rotate your pelvis, you're going to have an element of pushing backwards and forwards to help rotate your pelvis, and that in turn is going to help you rotate your torso. So there's, and you to move correctly on the downswing, there's an element what you're trying to, and this is probably one of the biggest things I could say for most of the listeners, that, you know, if to help you improve your ball striking, if you was to just think before the club gets halfway back, so think your left arm as a right-handed golfer is horizontal or level or parallel to the ground. At that point there, you want to be pushing your trail foot, your right foot, pushing the ground away from it. Okay? Push the ground to the right, and you'll get this overwhelming sensation that your body will want to move back to the left of your, to the center of your stance or to the left of the center of stance. So it's making you move and shift towards the target. And that's how we move, right? If I was to do a side glide, you know, if I was standing in a normal position and took a side step to the left towards the target or fairway, I've pushed away from my trail foot to move there, right? That's fact. I've pushed the ground from underneath me and made the ground slide laterally away from my foot to go that way. Now, for most golfers, that would be an amazing move for them to do halfway back, push the ground away from their right foot to translate their body and their mass a little bit earlier back towards center and ahead of center of stance.
That for me, almost like I don't almost trigger that movement until I've reached the top of my backswing. That's my transition.
So
I don't think about that until I've got to the top of my backswing. Okay. So what you're saying is I should be thinking about that before halfway through my backswing.
I can tell you now that the fastest players on the planet, before the shaft is horizontal to the ground on the backswing, so we're even lower than the arm horizontal now. So we're partway, early backswing. The longest guys on the planet are beginning to push quite hard under their right foot and starting to generate force underneath it, push the ground away.
So then you do let the force go back there initially, and then you quickly, before you're halfway through your swing, max, you're pushing back towards the target.
Pushing off of your lead or your trail foot, yep, and letting your body shift somewhat back towards target. Yeah. What we need to understand is that force precedes motion. So what you see on a video, okay, there needs to be a force before that that's made you move there. Okay, so if you want to shift at the top of your backswing and make a transition and move to change direction and to get your body and your mass moving forwards and to get your, you know, feeling like your pressure's moving over to your left foot, you're going to need to push away from your trail foot.
Yeah.
That's so okay. Interesting.
It's so many people... That's growing halfway back.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting to hear that because I think so many people, and absolutely myself included, definitely almost have like, think the thought of a swing is absolutely two halves. It's like there's everything in the backswing and there's nothing else you think about other than the backswing. So it's all focused on, as I was saying earlier, whether it's like making sure you drag the club along the ground or get to X position in your backswing. And then, as Chris says, you only even start even thinking about the downswing when you're at the top of your swing. But actually what you're saying is it's not as simple as that. There's forces that should be coming in towards you to, you know, to actually start moving towards and creating that swing towards the ball, even like as you're kind of not even, let's say, a third of the way through your backswing.
Yeah, 100%. And I only felt, you know, that sort of stuff is flagged up to me since I've owned the plates, because we're measuring that medial lateral force, that side to side shifting force. And no other system has measured that before. These 3D force plates have allowed us to measure it.
I'm excited yet terrified to try that. But you know what I mean? Like I'm picturing what my swings will look like on the range the first time I try that. It'll be like I kind of get like a quarter swing and I'm already like shifting through it. Like I'm excited, but yeah, I might record that and use
that. About our gentleman's agreement to film our first rain sessions back. I'm drawing a line under that one now.
just a point here I just wanted to add to that is that I often get asked, you know, how do I, you know, some of this stuff sounds really technical. How do you, you know, teach beginners? I actually had a lesson before lockdown. I gave two guys that never played golf before. And I was very early on in the session teaching ground reaction forces. And one of the first things I actually said to them after the basics of holding it right, standing properly, some alignments to the ball, right, so they're not all over the place and gripping it like they're holding a donkey's plonker. Now,
wow!
Because you get that, don't you? You know, the hand goes underneath, and you know both hands are underneath the club. You see the classic pose, right? You know,
I think we've got our quote on the social media teaser right there. Okay, great.
So we get the basics right, we get the alignments right, and then I actually was teaching these guys, and I, you know, before I'd even triggered that I was doing it, I was telling them to push off of their trail foot before the club was getting halfway back. And it was just like a game changer. And I kind of gone into this mode. I was just in my coaching mode, right? I wasn't aware of, you know, I'm just getting the golfer in front of me to hit it better. I'm teaching ground reaction forces. I'm just saying, can you just, I hold the club. I'm at that shaft horizontal position, standing in the classic position as coaches do. And I kind of hold the club, right? Just push away from me now. Move towards the target.
Yeah.
So then triggered that the brain was right. Okay, I've got to start creating this push in this direction at this point in the swing. And it was a transformation, probably one of the best beginner lessons I think I've ever had, that kind of seen that transformation before. I taught ground reaction forces, just simply just push there.
Wow.
And then we went on to the next phase. I then asked them to just push up through their left side a little bit later in the downswing, just push up through the left side and get into a finish position. So push off the trail foot, push up through the left foot. And it was a game changer. I didn't need to teach them plane or anything like that. Yeah, okay, there's, you know, some things that need to be tidied up. You know, these are two complete beginners, but they were, I've got videos of it. These guys were hitting it pretty good, you know, considering they've never had a golf lesson before, never picked up a golf club in their life.
Do you think, still, this might sound silly, but is that movement something that someone who's got no idea of what a golf swing like looks like, but someone who might be quite athletic, like, is it something that beginners will almost naturally do better before they get in their own head and get in their own way?
what, pushing off that foot when they're
just natural movement, because they're just thinking, how do I hit this as far as I can? And they'll just do it naturally, as opposed to then when we've done it and we've had hours of watching dodgy YouTube videos and overthinking 74 different swing thoughts in our backswing.
Well, the thing is, everyone that picks up a golf club and wants to give it a smash, what they do is they push off of their front foot really, really hard, and they keep pushing off that until they get to the top of the backswing. So they're over here.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen videos of that. So
they're just applying force towards the target to move their body and the club away from the target and keep going all the way to the top, and then try and apply a force in the opposite direction to start the downswing.
But by which point it's way too late.
Way too late. And then that will contribute to a lot of things coming over the top, because everything's trying to change direction at the same time. Yeah. And they're trying to get faster because they've been told to swing it slower, all that kind of thing. That they just, there's too much force in that direction. They haven't actually pushed back.
Mm.
And this is what amazes me when I look at, I look at swings of long drivers. I'm seeing a huge amount of push off of their left side. But before that club, as that club moves about a foot on the backswing, there's a huge amount of push back from the right foot. The right foot now is like a tug of war. And I don't know if you've watched Kyle Berkshire when he won the World Long Drive. He was doing this quite kind of really strange stomping side to side move. He was like this, stomping left to right. He's balancing out the forces and pushing one way and then pushing back up against it immediately. And that stomping move is what golfers, the beginner golfer, doesn't do. They've got this great force coming from the left side, but nothing fighting it back to move them, undo what they've just done. And it's important that shift happens early. So it won't harm anyone that starts to create that force, as long as it's, a gentle growing force that's pushing away from the trail foot. It's not going to harm anyone out there. It's actually going to help you hit better iron shots than you've ever done.
It's kind of like, if you think about other to Chris's point about other athletes and other sports, it's kind of like something just came into my head just there. If you consider sort of like, if you're hitting like a topspin forehand in tennis, right, it's exactly the movement we're talking about. You wouldn't hit a topspin forehand just by throwing your upper body at it. Sorry for anyone who's watching on YouTube, I'm probably making some very weird movements in the last couple of minutes. But it's exactly the same thing. You're taking it back, and you're all the forces coming from pushing off on your right foot and really kind of pushing that hip forward. It is transferable, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely. I don't think you know, when that ball's coming towards you, the best players have bedded their trail foot, the foot away from it, and they've got some spring and now are pushing away from it to come and meet the golf ball, right? I'd say the worst tennis players are the ones that keep running away from it, aren't they? They haven't prepared themselves and they're putting the force in the opposite direction to where they want to move. So they're just going back too much and the timings are too late. And this is it. They're just not, a force is preceding the motion. They're just too late with it. That's the biggest difference with good players and bad players. If I was to pull up swings on my database, people that are struggling to hit the golf ball anywhere near the center of the face, there'd be a big, big difference in, the timings of their forces, where they're pushing and when they're pushing off that trail foot.
Amazing. That last bit has been huge for me. Yeah. Like, that is the thing that I'm like, okay, I need to take that to the range.
Steve, just to give something kind of, almost said, put a little visual on it. I'm watching more golf than probably what I ever have, just because we're not doing tons, because obviously we're on lockdown. Without kind of jumping onto YouTube and checking out the long drive guys, because they're obviously going to be the best at it. Who are the best players on tour that kind of, well, let's go with the best movers. Who are the best at kind of using ground reacts and forces and everything that we've spoken about tonight? Who should we keep an eye out for and kind of watch what they do in their swing as a, I need to be doing that?
I mean, that's a good question. They're all amazing to watch because they're incredible in what they've done to achieve the dizzy heights of playing professional golf for a living. But I particularly like Victor Hovland's footwork. If I was to pick out one player that I like the way his feet are moving.
Nice.
I think he's got nice busy feet, busy in a good way. He's pushing. If you watch his, I've done a on my Instagram, I'd done an analysis of Victor Hovland's footwork and his ground reaction forces, just where he's pushing to make his foot do what he does. I think, you know, he's not a big guy. He's not a heavy guy, but statistically he's very good. He's very efficient. So he's got some great footwork. And I'd certainly, that would be a player if you can equal his mobility. They're very mobile, these guys, and very strong and flexible, right? That would be one that I would be looking at.
Are you saying I should put him in my fantasy league team this week? Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. You haven't, actually, because I think we've had this conversation before. You like Hovland, so
I'm a big fan of Hovland. He's been in the team several weeks. But yeah.
And I think if we were to take driving, one of the best drivers in the modern era is Rory McIlroy.
Yeah.
Fortunately, not one of the best short iron players and wedge players. You know, it's probably held him back a little bit. His amazing driving and his movement when he starts his backswing, where he stops his movement early on his backswing, how he starts to push off of his trail foot early, you know, mid backswing. He's incredible driver of the golf ball. Just time on time, whenever I've seen him at Wentworth, he's an absolute just bomber, just hits it miles. And, you know, for somebody that even at 16 years old, I was fortunate to watch him at the British amateur at Birkdale. He played with a greenkeeper that I know, Laurie Tremlett, who was a greenkeeper at Lewis at the time. And I went out to caddy for my friend Chris Purton, who was playing in British amateur at the time. Rory McIlroy was playing with Laurie Tremlett in the qualifying rounds, and Laurie wasn't sure in practice rounds. He hits it a long way, he bangs it over 300, and he said, this kid's just knocking it miles past me. You know, he was bombing it at 16. He was just phenomenal, and his movement, the fluidity and flow of his golf swing and the dynamics, how he shifts and shifts back, is incredible. He's not locked and centered and stuck and rigid. It's fluid and movements early, shifts are happening. And it's just as the modern, you know, the best driver of the modern era, you can't go wrong looking at Rory's driver golf swing.
So if you needed an invitation to watch Rory McIlroy with a driver in his hand, well, there you go.
Can I just end this little section by saying there's so many words that have been thrown around in this section that have terrified me, based on me being in lockdown for however many months and not moved. You said the word mobility. You said the word mobile. I'm like, I'm just none of these things right now. Like, I'm just not going to be able to do this, am I, when I get back out onto the golf course?
You might not be able to take it as far as these guys and wind the body up as much, but maybe lift your left heel a little bit, help your body turn a little bit more, shift off, push off that trail foot a little bit earlier on the backswing. Is it going to do you any harm, boys?
I guess on that point, you know, we do still have, you know, there are some chinks of light in that we are allowed to play golf before too long, but we do still have about 4 to 5 weeks to go before we get to that point. In practical terms, of stuff that we can be doing at home over the next 4 or 5 weeks in terms of building this idea of mobility and getting used to pushing off a little bit more. Are there any sort of practical tips do you think you could be giving to the guys out there to be doing in their living room? doing it at home, just to kind of start putting this in,
smash light bulbs everywhere.
Well, I could bat this one back over to Ben, actually, because this could be a good project for Sunday Red for you, Ben. But I think side gliding, I think single leg hops, I think single leg, you know, kind of balance and stability, especially when it comes to, because you've got to push off your legs, right? You've got to push off your feet, and having that awareness of doing it. That's a win-win for me. Jumping, you know, being able to, the power of doing squats, Ben, stuff like that, very, very important, I think. And just getting, you know, not going over the top with this stuff, just going to, you know, tapping into your ranges where you can get to without overkill, maybe just exploring maybe a little bit more each time when you're training. Ben, you probably know this better than me. It's not my field. But jumping, side gliding, hopping, that kind of stuff isn't going to do you any harm. It's only going to support and strengthen how you create ground reaction force.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. That is ground reaction force down to a T, I believe. Unless, chaps, you've got any more questions?
not about ground reaction forces, but I do have a question. Are we done with the myths? Okay, Steve, I'm for those of you who are listening, what I can't see in the room that Steve is in now is his little indoor brewery. Normally I can see bottles being made in the background.
Well, there's the dartboard.
There's the dartboard.
So you can't see these, but the bottles are here.
Yeah.
That's the famous Sunday Red Ale. That's where it starts.
Love it.
Okay, nice. In the jar, that's the treacle that goes in. It, you know, there's ropes and all sorts. Some, you know, you could almost think that this is like a bondage room in here. speed training towel. But under here, this is where it all happens. We've got all the,
Are we brewing now? Steve, are we brewing something now?
We're not brewing at the moment. I've got a stout that's on that I'm drinking and an IPA that I'm drinking at the moment. But I've got a classic lager and the Sunday Red Ale, which is going to be slightly tweaked for the next drink. So
you made the one with whiskey, right? You made the whiskey. Was that over Christmas? Did you make that?
Yeah, well, what I tend to do is I age the whiskey. So I've got, this is some Jack Daniels, but what I do is I get cherry wood and I toast it. So it kind of gets almost like caramelizes it. And then I put it in with the whiskey and leave it sealed for several weeks. So it kind of gets that aged kind of wood flavoring through it, you know, a bit like they do with beer and ale, putting it in like whiskey barrels and letting it age. So I kind of do a cheap alternative, just getting wood chips and sticking it in. alternative. But yeah, the brewery, this was supposed to be it was never a swing room. It was built for me to be able to do online, you know, coaching and stuff here and do my workout away from the house without being distracted by the kids and spoiling their space. But it's turned into a brewery now with a little that's become quite fun.
Absolutely love it. Ground reaction force expert and home brewer. Love it. Fantastic.
Love that.
Very good.
Right, Steve, to wrap up, that's all the serious, excited stuff done. You'll have to apologise if you heard that in the background. No, I don't think you did.
No, that means no goals.
Well, we're currently recording whilst the Chelsea Atletico Madrid game is on and Chelsea have just scored. So, sorry, ladies and gents. Realistic.
We did not hear anything, mate.
Okay. I did. Okay, so we're going to finish off with a little bit of fun. We've done this with every guest that we've had on our show. And I am going to hand over tonight. Tim, please take us away.
So, very, very important. We've asked this to every guest we've had on so far. Most important question we have. You've just finished your round. It's a great round. One of your best ever. What is the best post-round meal you can eat from the clubhouse? Now, it is an opinion question, but there is a right and wrong answer.
The best post-round meal? It has to be a meal and not a snack, right?
I mean, it depends what you class as a snack.
Because I do love a bag of the scampi fries. Right? And the scampi fries with a lager for me, it just seems to work. But that's a snack, unfortunately. It's not a meal. I'd always go with a burger. Can't beat a burger.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the same answer that Peter Finch gave. So you're in very, very good company. It is still the wrong answer. The right answer is a club sandwich. We're still yet to find a guest who's got it right. But
that's a club sandwich. Yeah, I mean, they are delicious. You know, I've had some sensational club sandwiches before. I think one was a West Hill Golf Club, I think, was one of their club sandwiches. That was a good one.
Yeah. Did it have an egg in it?
Yeah, good point.
We are genuinely thinking.
It has to have it in there, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I genuinely think we need to do a slice of golf Sunday Red review system on golf courses. And part of the review has to include the club sandwich review. Like, I think we're going to have to, like, if they don't have a club sandwich on the menu, you cannot give that golf club 5 stars. Even if it was the best golf course you've ever played, can't be 5 stars if it doesn't have a club sandwich.
You know, I'm happy to that.
You enjoy your club sandwich then. How many of you have the club sandwich when you come in?
You've got to have a club sandwich. That's the only thing that you can have.
I don't know if there's many courses I've been to where I've not tried the club sandwich, if I'm honest.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
I like it. I mean, I'm going to have to get back on the wagon with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's when you start going abroad is when it gets really, really fun. I mean, you go to Portugal and you get sort of like a Nando's version of a club sandwich. Then you're talking really special club sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's filth. Yeah, no, absolutely. So what's the favourite drink before we finish? What's the favourite tipple for all of you boys then? I know Chris is a craft lager boy, so...
Craft ale.
Yeah, I personally, I love a craft ale, but I do also, I mean, it's a stout for me. You can't beat a good stout.
Post-round though, not after a hot round, surely not.
Yeah, admittedly, if it's the middle of summer, then you're probably not going to start downing a pint of Guinness. Good point, Chris. Okay, I'll revise. If it's winter, a stout. If it's summer, a nice craft ale for me.
Okay.
I'm unfortunately quite boring with this because I am gluten intolerant, so it has to be a gluten-free Peroni every time, because that's about the only brand that actually produces decent gluten-free beer. So I quite like a post-round lager, but it's slim pickings out there.
Can you get many clubs that do gluten-free beers?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think Peroni, because Peroni is such a big and popular brand, and I think their gluten-free beer is so popular. I think most clubs do it. You do find it most places. If not, it will be a cider, because cider is naturally gluten-free. So, yeah. Unfortunately, it's quite a boring response, but it is what it is, unfortunately.
So listener participation for this week is, does your club do a good club sandwich?
And also, if props for gluten-free bread as well, because it's pointless having a gluten-free beer if I'm having full gluten.
Absolutely, yeah.
And secondly, does your club do gluten-free beer so that Ben can come along and play? Is the...
Peroni. It was a good pump for Peroni there.
Or if you know any other gluten-free beers, please tell Ben to drink something other than Peroni.
Steve, thank you ever so much for your time tonight. Where can everyone go and find you and the amazing things that you're doing, mate?
Okay, social media, you'll see me every day posting something on Instagram. That seems to be the popular place for me to hang at the moment. So that's at SF Golf Perform. On Facebook, of course, that's Steve Furlonger Golf Performance. And on YouTube, I do have a YouTube channel with several hundred videos which have been done over the years. And similar to Facebook, that's Steve Furlonger Golf Performance as well.
And I said it at the start of the intro, but I do have to give credit. If you get the chance to head down to Steve's studio, do pop in, because it is flipping cool. And if you like gadgets and gizmos, and you like it how it's tied into golf, then it's definitely a place you want to go and find out.
The only other thing that I'll throw in here is Steve is very active within the Sunday Red group. So if you're in the Sunday Red group, you'll have no doubt seen him. You'll have no doubt seen his live videos where he's in a studio working through Sunday Red members' questions, etc. So if you're in there, you'll see him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Our live stuff is probably something we've talked about this a little bit, Chris, haven't we? But going forwards, I'm quite looking forward to doing the live sessions where people can tune in, throw the questions at me. If I'm at the studio as well, or, you know, doing something there, then, you know, demonstrations are easy to be done. And the good thing about that, obviously, then we post it up on the group as well. It goes there as a recorded version. And they're quite popular, Chris. They've been, you know, quite well supported, haven't they? They've been taken well, and we get quite a few people tune into them.
Yeah. Nah. It's not often you get access to a pro while you're sat at home and they're on the range and you can ask them anything, isn't it? So I think people enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. They're good fun.
All right, chaps, thank you ever so much. Steve, thank you for your time, good sir. And we will see you all real soon.
Catch you later.
Deal.
If you love what Steve had to say and you love the episode, please do us a huge favour by leaving us a review and tell a friend or two about A Slice of Golf. This episode is brought to you by Sunday Red Golf, the golf club for everyone, from the absolute sublime to the Sunday hacker. If you want to join our golf club, head over to sundayredgolf.co.uk now. Also, we'd like to thank TourChamp. Over at TourChamp, you can create your own golf leagues for you and your mates absolutely free of charge. And, well, we're nearing the end of lockdown now, so it's definitely time to get involved. You can find out more at tourchamp.co.